We are on Chaf Dalet, page Chaf Dalet. We're up to Seif Chaf Aleph, and we will learn for the protection of Chayalim in Israel now, and I will single out Aviv ben Paula, who is the soldier I've been paired with via the Shmira project. If you're not familiar with that, I'll give you an email that I'm sending out tomorrow, and you'll see it there. So we're dealing with the case of a borrower who defaults on a debt, and what you're able to collect for payment of the debt. And here we're going to talk about tools of the trade, collecting those. So in Chaf Aleph, at the top of the page, he says, "Haya halove uman mashirim lo miklei umnuso shnei kelim mikol min." In the event the borrower is a craftsman, then we leave him two of every kind of tool that he uses in his craft. Now, when we say craft, we mean that literally. So he's a goldsmith. He's a manufacturer of something. That's what we're talking about. Aval tzemed bakar v'chamur. However, a pair of cattle, donkeys, v'chein sapan sheyesh lo sfina, or if he's a sailor and he has a boat, aval pi she'ein lo mezonos ela me'elu ein mashirin lo. Even if that is his sole means of parnasa, nonetheless, we don't leave those for him. Some say you would not leave him merchandise, even if he's a peddler and that's all he does for a living, or he owns a store. Nonetheless, don't leave that for him. And some disagree on that point and say that merchandise from which he is supported is in a class of its own. It's not really considered part of a business. It's actually considered like his food, because it directly translates to his food. And that the logic of it, I believe, is because we say regarding food that we don't actually leave him physical food, because that's going to run out. We leave him money to purchase food for a period of time. So we will view these assets like the money that he is using to buy food, because he trades it in and gets money, and that's the way it works. That's the logic. But we have to go back to the beginning of this, and this whole issue of the craftsman. If you take a look at Nun Aleph on the bottom, it is seven lines down.
This wouldn't come to Noah, would it?
What do you mean? No, why, what? You mean two? No, no. These are tools, not animals. We said you're not leaving in the animals. Take a look at Seif Katan Nun Aleph. It's on the seventh of the line to the bottom. Shulchan Aruch Simen Tzadi Zayin Chaf Gimel. He tells you where to look in the Shulchan Aruch. We've quoted it before. We're going to quote it again shortly, actually, on the sheet, but not yet. V'myesh lo mimin echad yoser mishnayim. What if he has more than two of a particular kind? So molchrim hamosar. Then we'll sell off whatever he has that is extra. Aval pish mimin hasheni ein lo rak echad ein mashirim lo kedei lahashlim. And tools are not fungible. So you can't say that if he has, let's say he's a craftsman who uses hammers and screwdrivers as part of his craft. So if he has three hammers and one screwdriver, we don't say, okay, you can use, trade in the hammer to get a screwdriver. We don't let him do it. We sell off the hammer that he has that's extra, and he's stuck. He only has one screwdriver. That's the idea. These are not, you can't trade off one for the other. Fungible would mean that what you have in one account, you can then shift into a different account. That's why I'm using the term fungible. I don't know if that's literally what fungible means, but that's the way I use it. That you can just sort of shift things from one account to another.
It's called creative accounting.
Maybe. Vilich Ora, he then continues to say, Im nishbar echad me'akelim sheish irulo, uba'ulo ma'os. Let's say one of his kelim breaks. Okay, after, you did your sidur already. You left him two hammers. One of the hammers breaks. Uba'u lo mamos. But then, after that happens, he gets money, which he can then theoretically use to buy a hammer, or he can use to pay off the debt. Yachol liknos kedei lahashlim mashish iru lo midin sudar. So he is allowed to use that money in order to in order to purchase another one of these tools that had been left to him for the Sidur, Miu Esher She'eno Yachol Liknos. But not necessarily. The argument could be made that he can't use the money for this purchase. Kishem She'en Mashirin Lo Betchila Moz Kedei Liknos. Just like we don't leave him money to use for a purchase in the beginning. Meaning, if he didn't have a hammer, we wouldn't leave him money to buy one. So we're not going to leave him money now to buy a replacement. That would be the argument against. But so,
isn't it if he only has one screwdriver, we wouldn't leave money to buy the second screwdriver?
That's true, right. Right, no, that's correct. So that's his statement. If it's a rechiyun, this requires examination. It's not clear. And he says, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch Harav, when he presents the laws of Sidur, he actually leaves out the whole section about the tools of the craftsman. Unclear why he does, why he leaves that out. It's straight Shulchan Aruch. But then he gives you a tshuva from the Minchas Yitzchak. He refers you to a tshuva from the Minchas Yitzchak. So I brought the tshuva here in Source Aleph on the side sheet. Very interesting case. The case is, excuse me, regarding the tools of a butcher in Venezuela. And you get the whole story in the tshuva, that's why I brought you the original. You can see most of this is the she'ela. She'ela, question. V'hine ata basi lifnos lahadras ge'ono b'she'ela de lahalon. The writer says, the writer too of Yitzchak Weiss says, I'm turning to the great authority here, on this question. Zek hameshanim yesh lekahal adati shchita mishala. For years, my community has had its own shchita. Ha'omedes tachas hashgachasi. It's been under my supervision. The CD has a mistake. It shouldn't be a samach, it should be a mem. The meat is sold to various butchers in the city. Habasar nimkar b'hakafa. The meat is sold on commission. On tab. V'katzavim regilim l'shalem achrei shavua o shavuayim. And then the butchers will pay it back after a week or two. So in other words, you have a central schlachthaus. That's where they're doing the shechita. And the meat is sold to the butchers for them to turn around and sell. But they don't pay up front. They pay once they've succeeded in selling it off. Achrei shemach v'sabasu b'konim, after they have sold off the meat. V'haya katzav echad shelo shilim. But there was a particular butcher who didn't pay for the meat that he had been sold. They claimed it all sorts of times. The debt became very large. Yosef elef dolar, more than $1,000. Which, you know, we kind of laugh at. Like, a very large debt in the business of a community of $1,000. We'd be very lucky to get away with that. But apparently this was a significant sum for the community. I don't remember what year this was. But he says, my community can't do it. We can't simply forgive the debt. Because remember, the shechita is being done by a communal fund. So what happened is, the leaders of the community turned to the government and asked them to actually impound the tools of the butcher. The terms of it would be that he could work there as he did before, but he would not be allowed to sell off any of the property of the butcher shop. It's no longer his, effectively. Impounding is not really the right word, but I don't know what the right word is for it.
You're nationalizing or communalizing.
There's a better word for it. I mean, they're freezing the assets, essentially, but there's a term for it. But he says that's what they want to do. These tools, the property of the butcher shop, would be held, so to speak, as collateral until he pays off the debt. Maybe putting a lien on it is the term. I don't know. And the leaders of the community waited and waited while he was late. V'achilu ad bosh is a phrase from Tanakh. V'akatzav lo shilem, but he's still not paying. So here they are. They waited already. Then, after having waited, they put this lien on the property of the butcher shop, and still, he's not paying. And they're waiting, but Al Kain rotzim achshav limkor as klei ha'it leiz be'az bezras ha'shiltonut. What they would like to do is, through the agency of the government, sell off the property of the butcher shop. Kedei lahasir hefsed meruba min ha'kahal, in order to remove great loss from the community. Ha'chafatzim ha'chashuvim bi'yoser, the most important of the equipment is, heim aron, a meat locker, mikharer, a fridge, or a freezer, mikarchash mali gadol, a great electric freezer, maybe it's our own mikarer, maybe it's like a big closet freezer, I don't know. Masur, a saw, hamitnanea al yedei manoa, which is motorized, manoa chashmali, lachto chatzamot, it's a motorized saw that's used to cut the bones of the meat, maznayim, a scale, v'od, and other things like that. So the rabbi who's sending the question to Rav Yitzchak Weiss asks, can you do that? Are you able to do this under the rules that we've been discussing? What is the status of these kelim? Sham b'shulchan aruch mevaer k'shem esadrin lebalchov nosdin lo klei umnus. There, in the Shulchan Aruch, which we've already referred to, it says that when we arrange property for the debtor and for the creditor, when we arrange payment for the creditor, we give him the tools of the trade. We leave the debtor the tools of the trade. Ve'ilu sha'ar matalzin, but other movable items, aval pi she'en l'mazonos alameyem, einos nimlo. Even if those are the only source of his income, nonetheless, we don't give that to him. Mipnei she'en b'chlal nechassim. Those are called nechassim. They're called property, not tools, as we'll discuss a little bit later. Ubal chov gova mehem chovo. The creditor is allowed to take it. Vihine lefiyani is daiti. So the questioner says, in my humble opinion, hachafatzim hanal einam bichlal klei umnus. These are not tools of the trade. Kiaron mikarer, as far as the meat locker, the fridge, aval or in the freezer, aval pishan achutz meod b'medina chama kama Argentina. Oh, so it's not Venezuela, it's Argentina. Sorry, the World Cup fans will care. So he says, even though this is very necessary in a hot country like Argentina, you can't run a butcher store without having a freezer. But you don't have to have it. You just have to sell off your meat right away. He says, you know, that's what we did historically until they invented freezers. Until you had electric freezers, so you had a shorter shelf life for the meat, that's all. And he says the same thing is true for an electric saw. You can use a plain old cleaver. That's what they used to do. So, do we view these as necessary tools of the trade? How do we look at them? Tshuva. So Rav Weiss writes, Nira, it appears, Da'af she'me'ikar ha'din ha'yu yecholen ha'kahol limkores aron ha'mekarer. He says the truth is, letter of the law, it looks like they are able to sell it off, to sell off the meat locker. And the electric saw, mitam shekasak vota raso, for the reason that you gave. He says, just like they say regarding clothing, which we already discussed, you know, a few weeks ago. When we say you leave him clothing, we don't let him have fine clothing, silks and a gold hat. We said give him clothing that is suitable, although we had a whole discussion about what that meant. So he says, you could say the same rule applies here. That in fact, these are luxuries. The meat freezer, it's a luxury. His argument is not that they don't qualify as tools. His argument is that they're not necessary tools. Because you can sell the meat sooner, and therefore you won't need the freezer. And you could break the bones with a regular old cleaver the same way they used to do until they got a motorized saw. However, he says, still, you do have to consider that the following source is relevant from the Gemara in Bava Mitzia, Pegim Lamed Aleph, Vizel Ashrono, as it says there. You remember this story. We've discussed it on other occasions. Rabba Bar Bar Chana Tavrulei Hanu Shikuloi Chavisa Dechavra. The Rabba Bar Bar Chana had barrels that were being carried by porters. And the porters broke the barrels of wine. Shaka Leglimayu, so he took their coats as payment. Asu Amru L'Rav, and they came to Rav and protested. And Amar Le, Hav L'Hu Glimayu, and Rav said to him, give them their coats back. Amar Le, Dina Hachi, he said, really, is that the rule? Amar Le, and he said, yes. Laman telech b'derech tovim, the pasuk says you should go in the path of the good. And then he says to him not only that, but you have to pay them their wages for their day's work. As part of Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. Why that's so is a longer discussion about Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, but his statement is, letter of the law, you have the right to those kalim. You have the right to the saw, you have the right to the freezer. That's what Minchas Yitzchak says. But I don't think you should do that. He doesn't think you should do that. Even though the community is now suffering. Now, interestingly, go back into the Pesachei Choshen, please. I'm going to skip the four lines where he just summarizes for you the Minchas Yitzchak, because we just read it. But at the beginning of the line, Ulefi Ani Yuzdaiti, Vav Lamed Ayin Nun Dalet. You see that? Middle of the Pesachei Choshen. Ulefi Ani Yuzdaiti, in my opinion, Yesh Lepak Peik Bazeh. There is room to challenge this. Because logically, the argument should be that all you have is that place and that time. By which he means, you can't say to someone who is a butcher in whatever year, let's say 2014, you now have to live by the standards that butchers had in the 17th century, just because at some point butchers did live in the 17th century. Then he says he disagrees with that concept. He says, today, these things are necessary for a butcher, certainly a freezer. He says, he doesn't think that, he doesn't agree with the Minchas Yitzchak's argument that you can get by without these things. He says, we go with what people get by with now. And you could imagine an extension of the argument of Minchas Yitzchak. Right? What if this fellow has a cell phone? So we'll say, well, you don't need a cell phone. Or what if this fellow has shoes? We'll say, well, you don't need shoes. You can get by with sandals. Because, there were times when people got by with just sandals. Like, at what point do you draw this line? What standard is... Where is the baseline for how he's expected to live? Yeah?
If something is regarded as necessary for a trade, and everybody has customers, and they can have fridges, then the person can have a chance to survive in this trade. But everybody has electric thaws and big freezers, then we're really not leaving him the basic necessities.
So that's a very interesting point. It's an interesting point. It really hasn't been made in terms of his comments here. He didn't raise it, but you're right. If we actually expect him to survive in business, he has to be able to compete.
Right, that's
and you're removing his tools for competition. It's a worthwhile point.
But it's not tools of competition. It's the industry is such that people go and shop, and they expect that this butcher keeps stuff in the fridge. Now, if this butcher doesn't have a fridge, he has to completely redo the way he operates.
Correct.
He can't keep anything.
Correct. Correct.
It would be like if somebody was a courier for a job, and it used to be that people delivered mail by foot. Now everybody has a bicycle, and if you take away his bicycle, he can't compete.
Right. I mean, you're both making these are separate but related points. Fundamentally, this is not called enabling him to carry out his business. Whichever angle I take on it, it's not enabling him to carry out his business. Whether I mention it because, in general, this isn't how he's going to be able to do business, as Byron is suggesting, or that he's going to be at a disadvantage competitively, as Renan is suggesting. Right, so I don't remember when the Minchas Yitzchak's Shuva was. I have this vague memory that it was 1970s, but I don't actually remember. I'd have to look it up. Believe me, I'll look it up and email around. I don't remember.
Sure.
Sorry?
What does he say to do then?
So he says, you could take it, but you shouldn't take it.
So what should you do? Just let the losses come down?
Apparently, you find a better way to get the money out of him, yeah. That's correct.
Boycott the store?
Mm-hmm. Well, boycotting the store isn't going to help you. Just the opposite. You want to get people to go there in order for there to be money for you to claim.
Well, I look at that equipment being more classified like karka. It stays such large.
See, the problem is that we take karka. Right? The karka is the first thing to go. So that's part of the challenge. But there's another dimension which he didn't bring in here, and frankly I'm not sure why he didn't bring it in. But because we're about to see it, I'm going to hold off just for a little bit. There's another dimension to this. I'm not sure why he didn't, why the Menachas Yitzchak didn't entertain it. Take a look at Nun Beis. Nun Beis is a comment on the statement in the Pesach Choshen on top regarding the animals that we take as animals, we take as boat, those things we do take. So in Nun Beis, he refers you to the Shulchan Aruch, which we have already seen, but now I'm going to turn you to our side sheet where we get the background for the Shulchan Aruch. The discussion about this, you may recall from 2 weeks ago, the whole discussion about what we leave him and what we take from him, stems from the rule, the case in which somebody dedicated his value to the Beis HaMikdash and then he couldn't pay. And the question is, so what do we take and what do we leave him? So regarding that, the Mishnah in Erchin says, it's source base, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Im Haya Ikar, Nosin Lotzim Do, if he's a farmer, we give him his pair of oxen. Chamar, if he's a donkey driver, he has a caravan or he has a courier business, Nosin Lo Chamaro, you give him his donkey. There you go, we don't make him do it on foot. That's the Mishnah, on which the Gemara comments, on Rabbi Eliezer's statement that we leave him his animals. The Rabbanan, the Gemara asks, what's the Rabbanan's perspective? Why doesn't the Rabbanan agree with that? Why is that only Rabbi Eliezer talking? Han hu lav klei umnus ninhu, ela nechasim ninhu. So they say that which the Menachas Yitzchak, whose questioner referred to as well, these are not called tools. These are called assets. So if you take a look at source Gimel now, we move to the time of the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Shmuel Hasardi in his Sefer HaTrumos. He is, I think, 13th century. If he's not, I'm not off by more than a century in either direction. But he says, Umishani lav klei umnus ninu ala nechasim ninu. He says, our Gemara answers that according to the Rabbanan, these are assets, not tools. V'hilchasa kavasayu, the law follows their position. V'aval pisha mistaker bahen, even though he makes his living with those. V'nizon mehen, and he's fed by them. Nonetheless, they will be sold off with the other movable items in Beis Din. They will be given to his creditor. Because these are only called assets. And based on that, you see the halacha in Shulchan Aruch source Dalet, where we say, like the Rabbanan against Rabbi Eliezer, we will not leave him his animals. Well, if he owns a boat, we do not give him the boat. The added word is important. Ella may elu, even though he has no food other than via these. Ein elu kelim ela nachasim. They're not tools. They're nachasim. They're assets. V'yimachru im shar metalton v'beis din. They are sold off with his other property in Beis Din. And they are given to his creditor. So, take a look now at Nun Beis, please, in the Pesachei Choshen. Now that we've seen how the halacha develops from the Mishnah and Erchin through to Shulchan Aruch, he quotes you the Shulchan Aruch, and he says, V'poskim kasvu ha-ta'am, she'dvarim elohim b'chlal, nachasim she'en mashirim lo. He says, the poskim have given the reason, as we've seen, saying these are just assets. But he says, I really don't see what the reason is for making this distinction between assets and tools. He says, based on this, we have to now evaluate other items, kagon mechonot ta'asiya, uchidome, like, let's say, equipment, the machinery that's used in a factory. Are these tools? Or are these assets? V'alpim ha'she'echtov lahalan, and he says, based on what he's going to write in Sifkata Nun Zayin, from the words of the Rashba that, God willing, we'll see there, efshur she'kol kli she'omei lahaskiro domeh lebakar usfina, u'kli she'oseh b'malacha ba'atzmo dino g'klei umnus. He proposes the following distinction. He says, that which is up for rental is like nechasim. And it can be taken from him. Whereas that with which he himself does the work personally, that's a different story. That's a tool. I am not clear on what that means.
If he owns something.
But we know here that he owns it.
Owns what?
The animal, the boat, whatever it is.
Today's industry is this model beast.
So I'm not sure that's what he means. I suspect what he actually is referring to is that which he would rent out to others. In other words, I'm a carpenter, I have a hammer, I don't rent my hammer to others, I use the hammer to do work. If someone came to me and said, Mr. Carpenter, can you rent me your hammer? I would never dawn on me to rent out a hammer. I wouldn't know how to do it. Whereas, I'm a donkey driver, and this is my fleet of donkeys, and yes, I rent out donkeys, or I have a boat, and I let people, you know, I let the boat out to people, and they'll use it for carrying their merchandise or whatever. Maybe that's what he means. But it still isn't satisfactory in terms of explaining why the logic should differ. We didn't see the Rashba yet.
So the distinction is that these are materials through which that someone else uses to get the job done. I will take your donkey so that I will rent your donkey so that I can do a job as compared to I use my own hammer to do the work. Nobody comes to borrow my hammer.
I believe that's what he means. Although we still have to, we have to get to the Rashba that he's basing this on. We haven't seen that yet. But I believe that's what he is saying. But there's another piece of logic here that I think is very important. I think we're going to get to it, but I'll mention it now. Just because I don't want to let it go, which is, I think part of this really is based on intent. In the sense that what a lot of this comes back to is, what does he expect to have to use to pay off the debt at the time that the debt is originated? When he borrows the money, what did he expect that he could potentially have to give up? And I think what we're suggesting here is that there is some kind of a mental state which we are able to evaluate based on current conditions and what's considered the norm to say, where we live, this is the way it works. These things are considered tools, and no one would ever dawn, it wouldn't dawn on anybody to take these for payment of the debt. These things are assets, and yes, people have them taken from them. And it's really, it's not defined based on a rule. It's defined based on a general sensibility, the way that people look at these things. And therefore, you can't really judge from one culture to another. This was the way they looked at the donkey and the boat versus the hammer and the screwdriver. You'll see, I hope we'll get to where I saw this, but I believe that that's what we're, that may be what's behind this. You can see that Pesach Choshen himself is confused. He says, I haven't really found a good distinction between them, but I suspect that that's where this is. In Nun Gimel, he commented on the line where we said that merchandise would not be left for him. We would take his merchandise, according to that view. So in Nun Gimel, he tells you that's the Aruch HaShulchan's position, is that we take the merchandise. V'nira she'imu mevakesh zman beis din kedei limkor berevach nosdim lo. If he turns to the beis din and says, listen, I understand you want to take my merchandise, but if you take it and sell it off now, it's going to be worthless. If you wait a couple of months and you do the sale properly over time and you let people bid, you'll do much better. And therefore, I will have paid off more of my debt. So that's legitimate. They'll say, okay, we'll give you time to do the sale properly. And he quotes you the Nesivos on the Shulchan Aruch to that effect.
They don't say on us to pay back.
No, but that's the whole thing.
Yeah, I realize that.
He doesn't say it. No, but I think that's implicit. The last line that we had seen in Chaf Aleph said that some say that the schora, that is merchandise, is like ochel nefesh. So here he refers you to a very interesting line in the Chasam Sofer, source Hay. This is from the Chasam Sofer. When you use a Shulchan Aruch, you find the notes of the Chasam Sofer in the margin. So this is one of those marginal notes. The Chasam Sofer writes regarding this issue of merchandise, Ubizman hazeh, nowadays, okay, so 18th century Hungary. Ikar mechiasam likach behakafa velimkor behakafa bachanut. He says, you want to know how people make money? They buy merchandise on tab, on credit, and then they sell it off to a store on credit, right? And then the store, when the store owner gets paid because he sells the stuff, then he turns around and pays the peddler, who turns around and pays the wholesaler from whom he got it in the first place. So if you go to the store to take this fellow's merchandise, it's like you're taking somebody's life, which we say you're not allowed to do. when you're taking collateral. Al kein noagim likboa zmanim v'termin. Termin are terms. Yeah. Lipeiraon achas leachas kedei shelo yipol mata lagamri. So he says we actually don't do it this way. We assign periods of time and say this is how we're going to do it in a case by case basis. We're going to do this to keep him from collapsing. Ve'elokim nitzav ba'adat kel. Hashem is there with the judges. Kein yira lefiyani is the idea. That's the Chasam Sofer statement. So now look back at Nun Dalet. In the Pesach Hoshen. He quotes you the Chasam Sofer, and he links it with what we saw 2 weeks ago in the Aruch HaShulchan. You remember that the Aruch HaShulchan made the comment that we're not going to humiliate somebody. The Aruch HaShulchan was talking about the case of selling somebody's place in shul. And we said if it's going to be a very humiliating thing, then we don't do that to him. We don't subject the guy to a humiliation for this. And that was part of our world picture of how the Aruch HaShulchan looks at this. The Aruch HaShulchan seems to view this process as a quasi-tzedakah process. It's not simply about payment of the debt, but it's about also doing tzedakah for the debtor. So, on that basis, take a look at what he does here in Nun Dalet. He quotes you the Chasam Sofer, Begilyon HaShulchan Aruch. And based on what the Aruch HaShulchan also wrote earlier about not shaming him, so based on what we wrote there earlier, Gam Aruch HaShulchan Modeh Lazeh, the Aruch HaShulchan will agree as well. Aval, Midivrei HaChasam Sofer Mashma, Shafilu Yoser Mizman Beis Din Nosnim Lo. It appears that the Chasam Sofer is going to say that we give him even more than the time frame of the Beis Din. Shekasav shenoagim likboa zmanim leperaon achas leachas. He says that. Here you go. Sure.
No problem. Also, we're going to leave early as well.
Okay. No problem. Because he says we will set up times for this person to be able to pay back, kedei shelo yipol mata legamri, so that the person will not collapse. He's giving you the quote from the Chasam Sofer that we saw. V'tzarach iyun maishna mitzemet bakar usfina. But he says I come back to the same problem, which is on the one hand he's being so generous to the debtor. Right, he's saying that we don't want to hurt the debtor, and we don't want to embarrass him, and we're going to make sure that he's able to survive this very benevolent position that the Chasam Sofer is taking on the one hand, and then on the other hand, right, the flip side of it is you have this statement of we're going to take his cattle and we're going to take his boat, and you know, like how do you balance the two? Is entirely unclear. Now, I think what's going on is that the Aruch HaShulchan, as well as the Chasam Sofer, they're more or less what they're actually doing is thwarting this. They're doing what the Minchas Yitzchak did in the case of the butcher. Right? That's really what they're doing. Right? In other words, they're saying, yes, theoretically, letter of the law, you could do this. You have the right to claim these things from the debtor. But we don't want you to do that. We want you to enable him to be able to live in a dignified way and to be able to persevere and ultimately pay back his debts. I think that's the tension that you're seeing. And it's what's a little befuddling to the Pesach Choshen here. So that concludes that point. We're not done with the topic though, because now you have to get to that Rashba that we mentioned. If you take a look on the top of the page, Chav Bet. Okay? Komasha nisba er. You see it? Chavbet on the top of the page. That's the one, yeah. Okay, Anna, you have it? On the top of the page that says Pesach Hoshen. Okay. Komasha nisba er bedin sidur. All of the laws that we have given regarding sidur, regarding taking the property of the borrower in order to pay off the person who lent him the money, but leaving the borrower various items, the same rule will apply. This goes back to the point that I made to Byron before. The same thing is true if he has land. Mochrin, we will sell it off. Umash irin lo kidei sidur, and we'll leave him whatever he needs in order to live. Aval pisha parnasaso minakarka. Even if he's a farmer, his living is from the land. V'yesh omrim, and some say, he says, even shehu adin shemotzian oso midiraso shadar ba. Some will even say that you will remove him from his dwelling. Now, that is a key line. We already quoted this a couple of weeks ago. When the Aruch HaShulchan said, we don't want to humiliate this fellow, so the Pesach HaChoshen said, I don't understand. You're worried about humiliating him, but you'll throw him out of his house? Like, the two don't go together. So, and that's why I say that I think what the Aruch HaShulchan is doing when he says we don't humiliate him is he's mixing in an element of tzedakah and saying, yes, it's true, under the laws of paying back debts, he's obligated to give this up, but under the laws of tzedakah, we are going to try to help him out. I think that's the balance that we're going for. But take a look at his commentary at the bottom now. Nun Zayin. He refers you to the Shach who's quoting the Rashba. So actually, if you look on the separate page, where I brought you the originals. Source Vav. Okay? The Shach writes in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch. He was the one who said, Vahu hadin shemotzian oso mi beso. The same law regarding taking other things says also that we will remove him from his home. And he quotes a responsum to that effect. So take a look at source Zayin now, which is the Rashba, who was the one who suggested this. He says, I get it from a Gemara in Gittin, which requires a little bit of explanation. We have an institution called a Pros Bowl. Right? This coming year, Pros Bowl. This coming year is a Shemitah year. One of the laws of Shemitah is that every 7 years, at the end of the Shemitah year, all loans that are overdue for payment are void. They're simply nullified. That's the law. However, that creates a problem. Because even though I have a biblical mitzvah that says cancel all debts every 7 years, I have another mitzvah, biblical mitzvah, that says, and when you see that that time is coming, you should not be reluctant to lend money. And that's a biblical mitzvah as well. One of the 613 is don't be reluctant to lend money, saying, well, you know, Shemitah year is coming and I'm going to lose it. And Hillel, going back 2,000 years, sees that people may be honoring the Pros Bowl, the Shemitah rule, but they're not honoring the rule about lending. And the result is that people who are in need are not able to get loans. Remember that lending, from the Torah's perspective, is a form of tzedakah. Lending is not an economic engine. You're not allowed to charge interest. It's simply tzedakah. And they're not getting the tzedakah they need. They're not able to plant their fields. They're not able to buy the merchandise. Nothing. And so Hillel says, I need to do something. So he takes advantage of a loophole. And it's a long story, but I'm making it short. The rule is that a loan that is payable to a court, to a Beit Din, is not nullified by Shemitah. So he makes up a form, which is called a Pros Bowl, in which the person who lends the money is able to assign the debt to the Beit Din for collection. Even though the Beit Din is never going to collect it, you're going to collect it. Nonetheless, you can act as though you are assigning it over to the courts, and therefore Shemitah will not nullify the debt. And that's called the Pros Bowl. And he does it because he says, people may be honoring this biblical mitzvah, but they're violating the other one. And we need to make sure they honor the other one, or else people are going to starve. So that's why he creates this Pros Bowl, taking advantage of that loophole. There's much more to be said about Pros Bowl, but it's beyond the scope of what we're going to do now. The point is this. In order for Pros Bowl to work, the borrower needs to have a little bit of land from which that debt could be collected. So use it as like a collateral. It has to be an anchored debt. And why that's so is a longer story. Also, but that's the rule. It has to be anchored in land. You follow? So that if I lent somebody money and he didn't have land, I couldn't create a Pros Bowl. What I would actually need to do is assign him some land, which he would then own, and which would then be the collateral, so that I could make this Pros Bowl. So take a look at what the Rashba now quotes from that Gemara, and you'll see why I'm going through all of this as preface. Garcin on the Gittin, Perek HaSholeach, the Gemara in the fourth chapter in Gittin says, Ein kosvin Pros Bowl ela al hakarka. You can't write a Pros Bowl document unless there is land securing the debt. Ve'amrinan Allah, and we say regarding that in the Gemara, Hishilu lo makom lahamid tanur v'kirayim kosvin olav prusbul. If they lend the borrower enough land that he could put his oven there, his stove there, that's good enough for the prusbul. It doesn't have to be a lot of land. Tiny portion of land is sufficient. But the Rashba sees in that, beyond the law of principle, is you're telling me that that little bit of land that was lent to him could have been used to pay the debt. That means that land is claimable for payment of a debt. If somebody defaults on a debt, you're going to take his land. That's what the Rashba sees. Alma, we see from here, Mishesh ilulo makom ladur lishtamesh bo. If someone has been lent a place to live, Balchov Govimenu, the creditor can take it. Va'omrimlo and say to him, Tsei atam isham, leave. Vaskirenu lachterim uprala zeh, rent it out to somebody else and pay the money. Oyamod zeh sham bimkomcha, or let this guy go live there. Now, what the Rashba threw in there is very, very important. It's easy to miss. The Rashba threw in four words. Haskirenu la'acherim upralazeh. Rent it out to somebody else and pay. And the reason I say that's important is because until I saw those four words, I would have assumed he was saying we could kick the guy out of the house. Now he's saying we don't kick him out. We're just telling him rent out space to somebody else and use the money to pay off. Keep that in mind, please. The Rashba then continues. V'garsin in Parakamad de Bava Basra. The Gemara in the first chapter in Bava Basra. Amar le Rava l'Rav Nachman. Rava says to Rav Nachman, Bechor upashut sheniach lem aviyam eved ubehema temeya. Let's say there are two brothers who inherit land. They inherit an eved, they inherit a non-kosher animal, and one of them is a firstborn, so he's supposed to get a double portion. And the other one is a regular sibling, because you can't have two firstborns. So Ketzad hin chalkin, how do they split the property? Amar lei, to which he replied, Shani omer oved lazeyom echad lazeh shneyamim. He says, no problem, let the eved, leave aside all discussions about having an eved that's beyond the scope of the class, but he says, let the eved work for one of them one day, and the other one 2 days. And that way, the two-thirds, one-third will be satisfied. And Rava agrees in that Gemara there regarding a case if you have two people who are both regular, neither one getting a double portion. Then he says, so just have them work one day for one and one day for the other. He does dispute when you have one as a double and one as a single. That's a separate discussion. But he says, so we could extrapolate from there to the case of a creditor and a borrower. That he rents out his house, he rents out the eved, and then pays the creditor in lo ratza limkor if he doesn't want to sell it outright. In other words, his point, the Rashba's point again is, you can rent it out. We're not kicking him out. He has the option of renting. And then he says, his last line is harsh. Ve'ein merachmin bedin. He says, we are not merciful in justice. Lomar ha'eich yotziu es halovim yibeiso b'shvilchov mu'at kazeh. To say, well, how can you do this to the borrower for this small amount of money? We're going to take him out of the house. She'ein hefesh b'davar zeh bein chov merubah l'mah. He says, we don't distinguish between a large amount and a small amount. This is the law. That's the position taken by the Rashba. Okay. Now, we still haven't seen what he's going to do with this Rashba. All we've seen is the quote of the Rashba, but there's more to see. Let me see if we can get it in here. If you jump back to page Chaf Dalet now. His first few lines in Nun Zayin were just quoting the Rashba. So I'm not going to bother going through that, except to note that there's a typo in here, that the Rashba is not Elef Kuf, it should read Elef Kuf Mem Gimel, not Kuf Mem Dalet. But I'm jumping to one line up from the bottom, the end of the line, Val Pi Divrei HaRashba. He says, based on the words of the Rashba, Hayanira Lathenius Daiti, it would appear in my humble opinion, She'ein Kofin Oso Limkor Ela Imkain Eina Rotzela Haskiro. We do not force the guy to sell, unless he refuses to rent. But if he wants to rent it out, if he wants to rent it out, flip the page, and he wants to pay from the rental money, that's fine. And he says, I'll get to that later. And it would also appear, Shehu Hadin, Vahu Atam, Shein Mashirim Lo Bakar V'chamor. Kamosha Kasapi Leel. This is what he was saying before, and distinguishing between that which we do leave him and that which we don't leave him. In the beginning of the class, we said that there is a view that says, not just there is a view, that's the Shulchan Aruch, that if he had a hammer or a screwdriver and he needed those as tools of the trade, we would leave those for him. But if he has a boat, then he has to get rid of that in order to be able to pay off the creditor. And we didn't understand, what's the difference? If he has a boat and he's using the boat as his tool of the trade, why is that any different from the hammer or the screwdriver? But he says now, you can understand the comment he was making before about the difference being that some things are normally rented out and some things are not normally rented out. A carpenter doesn't rent out his hammer. But a person who has, to modernize the case he's talking about, a person who owns a fleet of cars, right, does rent out the cars. So therefore, there's no reason to compel him to sell. Let him go about his business. Let him rent them out, right? We're not taking them away from him, in other words. The same way that we're saying, leave him his hammer to do his carpentry, we are leaving him his cars, or boat, or donkey. We're just telling him, you have to actively engage in the business in order to ensure that the person who was kind enough to lend you the money is not going to be left high and dry. So he says, that's the idea. We compel him to rent them out. As opposed to, if you're dealing with tools that people do not normally rent out to others, ulafize, and based on this, if he wants not to sell it, he wants to rent out the boat, rent out the donkey, rent out the house, you're not forcing him to sell. But then he has to concede that this appears to be his own invention. He says no one else has suggested this idea, that that's the distinction between them. Meaning, the key question that we started with of what's the difference between his boat and his donkey on the one hand, and his hammer and screwdriver on the other, I suggested that it's about mindset. What do people expect when they take out a loan? And that's one possibility with, I think, some sources to back it up. He says others suggested this very odd explanation that in one case it's called a tool, in another case it's called an asset. Right? But we didn't give any explanation of what that meant. So he is offering us a third possibility. In neither case are we taking them away. Where it's something that you normally use yourself to get a job done, you continue to use it, the hammer and the screwdriver. Where it's something that you normally rent out to others, go ahead and rent it out to others. In neither case are we taking the item away. That's what he's suggesting is the meaning of this ruling in Shulchan Aruch.
So how does he translate Ein Mashir in Lo? I mean, that's pretty straightforward.
Yes, I agree. I find his reading, while his reading is consistent with the Rashba, I find his reading difficult in terms of the Shulchan Aruch. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. And we are going to stop now with that.